Hello everybody, my name is Dawn Ubari Labari. I'm one of the sexual health doctors from Manchester in the UK. And I've got two cases to present to you, so I'm going to go quite rapidly, if that's okay. So I'm going to go quite rapidly, if that's okay, because I've only got 10 minutes. So just to put in a bit of context, syphilis in the UK is rising and has been since about the year 2000, as you can see on this graph from the Health Protection Agency. And particularly the highest rise in men who have sex with men, particularly between the ages of 25 and 44, as you can see on the graph on the right. So our first case is of a 40-year-old gentleman who was already diagnosed with HIV 9 months prior to this episode. He's an MSM and had been stabilised on antiretroviral therapy by this stage. He had a recovering CD4 count and an undetectable viral load. He then decided, as he was much better, to take a two-week holiday in Gran Canaria, which at the time we didn't know about. But anyway, his baseline serologies are as you can see on the screen. And when my patients say they're going to take a holiday to Gran Canaria and the MSM, I worry, okay? Because Gran Canaria, if you don't know, is a small island just off the south of Spain, and it's very well known as a very popular gay hotspot, but not just for specialised gay holidays, but also its sex venues, saunas and clubs. So he came back from his holiday, and a week after he'd come back from his holiday, presented to his GP, which would be his family practitioner, with a one-week history of diarrhea, rectal bleeding, and rectal discomfort. His GP was very good and examined him and found that there was a tender nodule in his rectum. He went on to have an urgent colonoscopy and biopsy, as is routine in the UK if you find a lump that's suspicious. And I think you'll have to trust me that over here is the nodule that the GP felt, which you can see has got a little collection of blood as well. So he had a full colonoscopy, and later on in his distal sigmoid as well, there was another lump with, you'll have to believe me, that there's a central ulceration around this point as well. So he, on the same day, he had a staging CT scan because the surgical doctors who had done his colonoscopy were obviously appropriately concerned that this may be cancer. The CT scan only showed the retroperitoneal lymph nodes, no metastases and no other distant lymph nodes at all. He came a few days later for his routine HIV bloods, as again is routine because he had his HIV care under us, completely unrelated to this. And the healthcare practitioner who took his bloods noted that he had oral ulcerations, which he hadn't noticed on his tongue and his oropharynx, but he said they were not painful, so he wasn't bothered about them. His bloods from this appointment showed that his liver function tests were slightly abnormal, particularly with a rise in his alkaline phosphatase, more than his ALT. And his treponemal serology had come back positive. So we recalled him urgently to the HIV clinic and asked him about symptoms, and at this point he then disclosed his recent symptoms, which he had presented to his GP with, told us he'd been referred to the surgical doctors, and that he'd had a biopsy. So obviously we contacted the histopathologist urgently, because we felt that obviously with the new serology, that would make a difference to what they need to look for in the biopsy. He was penicillin allergic, so he had 14 days of doxycycline orally, twice a day, and he's since had a repeat colonoscopy. It was about 6 months later, which has come back as normal, and all his symptoms have resolved and all the lesions had resolved. So just to share, but this is the only one I've got pathology for, so if anybody's interested in pathology, I don't know, but if you look at the picture on the left, that's a H&E stain showing a lot of dense purple, a lot of cells with dense purple nuclei, and those are the plasma cell infiltrates. The stain on the right is a specific treponemal immuno stain, which stains brown for spirochetes, and you're just gonna see there's quite a lot of them there. Okay, so on to the second case. This is a 50-year-old shoe designer who was known to our sexual health services, not because he was HIV positive, but he'd actually been HIV negative and used to come for routine screens. He, again, had presented to his general practitioner with actually a 6-month history of rectal bleeding, tenesmus and change in his bowel habit, where he had alternating constipation and diarrhea. He did have a significant family history in his mother, his maternal uncle and his older brother for bowel cancer. And again, appropriately, his GP referred him along the urgent cancer referral pathway. He had a MRI pelvis, a staging CT, and a colonoscopy all on the same day, which was very efficient, unlike most of the things that happens in the NHS. His MRI pelvis showed that he had this irregular mass about 4 centimetres from the anal verge, And he had some regional pericolonic lymph nodes, but again, no distant metastases on his CT as well. So his colonoscopy, these are the pictures from his colonoscopy, and as you can see here, there are multiple polypoid lesions, all with central ulceration, and most of them are actually bleeding. Okay. His lesions also spread all the way from the rectum into the distal sigmoid. So his histology, I don't have the pictures, but the initial report said that there were lots and lots of epithelial cells and spindle cells which were poorly differentiated. There was severe inflammatory cell infiltrates with lots of plasma cells. And there were lots of malignant markers done and they were all negative. He also had this special S100 antibody stain, which for anybody who doesn't know is a special stain looking for neural-based tumours such as schwannomas or gliomas. He also had a Walthenstari stain, which is a special silver stain, which is supposed to highlight spirochetes, but is also good for looking at Bartonella and H. pylori. Oh, sorry about the typo. So again, he decided to come to the GU clinic, or the sexual health clinic, as you guys know it, and he, because he said, well, I just want to screen because he's not had one for 9 months. And he presented himself to us as an asymptomatic MSM, reported that he'd had multiple casual partners, usually met in clubs or saunas, and as I mentioned, he'd already had a negative HIV antibody test 9 months prior. So again, his serology returned positive for treponemal serology, but all his other tests for gonorrhea, chlamydia, HIV, hepatitis B, and C were all negative. And again, his IgM was also positive. So we recalled him urgently, and at that point, again, he disclosed that actually I've had 6 months of rectal bleeding. And we examined him thoroughly and found that he hadn't noticed that he had a very symmetrical palmar plantar rash. He also then, we took a treponemal PCR from one of his rectal lesions, as they were still present at that time, who was being worked up for chemotherapy at this point. And we treated him on the same day with 2.4 million units of benzathine penicillin intramuscularly. He did have a follow-up colonoscopy with the surgical doctors 3 months later, and that was showed resolution of all his lesions. So we went back to the histology with this new information and said, should we just have another look at it? And because we had a specialist histopathologist in London that we knew about who was used to looking at unusual cases of syphilis or unusual presentations in HIV patients, we sent it to him. He reported that there was moderate hepatitis, abundant inflammation, particularly in lamina propria, with lots of plasma cells, but there was no endarteritis obliterans, which is one of the things you look for in syphilis. He said that the Walthenstari stain that was done was uninterpretable, which is why it was inconclusive. He queried whether this could be LGB still, as it would fit. He queried whether there could be bacillary angiomatosis. This was because he didn't have the full details of the serology yet. But again, there were not enough polymorphs for it to be bacillary angiomatosis. And he queried whether it could be inflammatory Kaposi sarcoma, but there were not enough spindle cells, although there were quite a few. So he did a special immunohistochemistry stain for treponema pallidum, which again he reported as they were heaving with spirochetes. So my questions for the panel are, should men and women who present with colorectal symptoms have screening for syphilis and maybe other STIs? Who should be carrying out that screening? Should it be the colorectal surgeons, which is how they usually present in the UK? Should it be the GPs? Should it be the sexual health doctors, given that these were all just coincidentally found? Should we have screened for sexually transmitted enteric bacteria in both cases? Actually, I didn't mention in the HIV positive man, we did screen for enteric bacteria, but not in the second case. What could be another explanation for the first cases of normal LFTs, and would you have treated him differently, given that he was penicillin allergic? Good.
Thank you very much, Barry, for that.
Could you just confirm that case one was, because they were under your care, had previous negative syphilis serology?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So we'll turn to our panel and quickly take those questions. I think you'll probably be able to skip through those fairly quickly, but I've also got a few other issues that I wanted to raise with you. So
So, yes, well, I'm going to ask Dr. Labari a question first. Why did you entitle this the Nietzsche Conundrum?
Because, I don't know if you guys know the story about Friedrich Nietzsche and the rumour, well, supposed rumour that apparently he didn't die of syphilis but may have actually died of brain cancer. So that's why, whether it was syphilis or cancer, sorry.
Yeah, because I always understood he went completely mad, didn't he? And he spent years in an asylum and supposedly died of neurosyphilis. But, okay. I think these are really interesting cases, and I think what's very interesting is the fact that these men did not present to a sexual health clinic, did they? Because if they had done initially, we would automatically have done those tests, because that's what we do. And I think there's been a number of cases now, haven't there, of men presenting to gastroenterologists, and because you know, a sexual history is not usually taken, they don't appreciate that they're gay men, etc., then they automatically go down a different diagnostic pathway. And as you've said, this sort of rapid cancer referral, which is very good in some ways, actually sort of short circuits the diagnostic process. And there have been a number of cases of this, haven't there? I mean, LGV is another classic case where there have been quite a few people who have initially been diagnosed as inflammatory bowel disease before people realize that it's LGV. So I think that's the main lesson here, is probably a need to raise awareness amongst other physicians, particularly gastroenterologists, about proctitis and the differential diagnosis of that.
But the thing is, in some specialties, the old adage of the great mimic has never been lost. So even today in urology, with even low-risk cases, they will often or usually do a syphilis urology. But outside of that, in other specialties, they've lost the concern and the fear of syphilis. And is it time to reintroduce that, and how do we do that?
Well, I think it's very interesting. I mean, I think I'd be interested to hear from the US people present what their experience is. But I think what's happened in the UK is there was a generation of physicians who would have tested almost everybody for syphilis, whatever. But that generation is sort of largely retired now. And following on from that, the rate of syphilis in the UK became so low that it really became a forgotten disease. And now it's becoming more common again, and we're getting unusual presentations like this in many different fields. And even the neurologists, the psychiatrists are often now not doing syphilis serology because that's no longer the habit in that specialty. And it probably needs to slowly be brought back in now because syphilis is re-emerging. But I'll hand over to Khalil. Is it the same in the US if people stop doing routine serology?
When you think about, so I think the answer to that first one is, should men and women with colorectal symptoms be screened for syphilis? The answer is depends on who the man is. If you look at the epidemiology of syphilis in the U.S., over 90% of cases are in men. Honestly, not every man should be screened for syphilis. A 60 or 55-year-old man who comes in who has a history of colorectal cancer, that's not the person that necessarily needs to be screened. And I think it highlights, your two cases highlight a very important issue, and that's the importance of a history and a sexual history. I mean, you have to be able to risk assess an individual, because routine screening for everybody doesn't make sense, and you have to have a relative pretest probability that you're going to get an answer. Otherwise, whatever you get in terms of, you know, the serological test results are very difficult to interpret. So I would say, depending on who it is, and in these two cases, it was clear that a screen would have been useful. But in other cases, it may not be so.
There's a parallel to this, though, and Doctor, perhaps you could comment on this, that you hear of cases of the women who've gone for a smear or a vaginal discharge, they've been noticed to have a very large ulcer on the cervix, and they've been referred very quickly to gynecologists who've gone on to do a cone biopsy and a removal. I mean, how routine would it be for, in Latin America, for people to have syphilis serology as an early screening test in genital malignancy?
I try to think how things go in Brazil in the general way, because I think it's very easy if the women go to OBGYN, because in OBGYN clinic, every woman, they are tested for syphilis in the first screening. For syphilis, for HIV, for other STDs, if they are in private service, if they are in public clinic, they are just tested for HIV, HBV, and syphilis. Then, I was thinking the problem, it's the same thing in Brazil. I think the new generation of physicians, they are not screening in routine. And I think the proctologists, they don't do the screening. Unless people go to the surgery, our patients that go to the church, they have been tested for HIV and syphilis. But the other way, I don't think so.
The slight thing that's worrying, and I think the audience may not appreciate, is that Manchester is a very large conurbation. It has a particularly vibrant
gay population.
Yep.
And the areas around Canal Street are sort of a draw for MSMs around the country. So I am surprised that your surgeons don't think about syphilis much more often, and HIV presumably quite often. Can we move on to the other question, please? And perhaps we should go down to question four, because this chap had abnormal liver tests. Pete?
I think that's quite a common finding in secondary syphilis, and both the transaminases and the alkaline phosphatase. I think the alkaline phosphatase is usually the one that's raised, but the transaminases can be raised as two. So I think that's quite a typical finding in secondary syphilis.
Okay. We were told that this chap was penicillin allergic. I mean, what do you mean by penicillin allergic?
I personally gave him penicillin and he came out in a rash and then forgot and gave him penicillin again and he had anaphylaxis.
Oh, yeah, anaphylaxis. He was properly allergic. He was treated with doxycycline. Would anybody have treated him differently? No. In the UK and Europe, we are very reliant on IgM. Yesterday we heard that you don't use IgM in the US. Keith, do you want to say anything about your reliance or the value of IgM that you find?
I don't know that it's very necessary. I mean, I think with the clinical picture and the strongly positive serology, particularly the high TETA, RPR or VDRL, I don't think you really need to do any more serology to know what the diagnosis is. I think the other thing that's interesting here is the presence of these nodules on colonoscopy. Now, I hadn't heard of that before. And I think this is probably a case, isn't it, now that people get colonoscoped much more quickly than they would have done in the past. I guess this was something that was always seen in syphilis. I wasn't aware of it, but I guess in the past people did not get a colonoscopy, did they? They were diagnosed and treated, and people weren't aware of these lesions. But, I mean, Khalil, have you heard of that before as part of...
So, I mean, when you look for these cases, and the reason why this is such, these are great cases, is because it's not very common. And I think you're right when you say that in the olden days we didn't look for it. And it's interesting with syphilis, when you look for it, you usually find it. And I think it's the same story with the LFTs. I mean, if we did LFT tests on every patient that walked in through the door with secondary syphilis, we'd find a bunch of people who had elevated alk phosphatases. So I think, and maybe the right answer is not to look for it. And when you suspect with syphilis, you treat, and then most patients tend to do well. So,
okay. I wanted to move on to asking the audience for any questions or comments around this case that we've had. And could you use the mic so that and introduce yourself?
Kathy Hsu, Massachusetts Department of Public Health, BU. Just out of curiosity, especially with the struggle between general practitioners and with specialists and the thinking behind this, was there any opportunity to offer feedback to the surgeons that were involved in either case, and how did that process go?
Yes, so
in terms of improving?
So yes, there was. The second case was actually the one that happened first. They happened within about 3 months of each other, and they were under two different surgeons. So the surgeon that was involved in the second case was very receptive and was actually quite excited by it, and I think he definitely has changed his practice, at least had done immediately following this, and was screening pretty much, and was asking about, he wasn't taking a full sexual history, but he was asking, I guess, people's sexuality, if they could identify their sexuality, and then he would screen for syphilis himself, and then would send them down to the GU department. So we got quite a lot of referrals following this from him directly, so that was good. The second case, however, because he was, I don't know whether it's because he was already HIV positive and under our care, but the surgeon sort of did okay, you found syphilis, fine, it's your problem now, I don't need to treat him for cancer, bye-bye. And wasn't really receptive when we tried to have an MDT about it, and didn't really attend, and it didn't really go any much further than that.
There's a slight peculiarity in the UK in that we keep our sexual health notes and often our HIV notes completely separate from other physicians. And so occasionally when something like this happens, often the old the situation of you shouldn't be keeping your notes separate, you shouldn't be keeping their status confidential to yourselves is raised, and then you get sidetracked into that as well.
Good morning, Stephanie Taylor from New Orleans. So one of the patients had a rash, so we
come to the conclusion that he had secondary, but the first person did not and had nodules. So do we consider those nodules primary?
They had mouth lesions, didn't they?
Yeah. So we considered him as primary. We actually did code him as primary syphilis.
Any other comments at all? Basil, I'm going to ask you, you've got a very large population in Sydney, and have you come to a better arrangement in working with your surgeons because you've gone through an LGB and a syphilis epidemic?
Well, I should add, first of all, the cases as outlined are not, in my experience, not particularly rare. I've seen many like that. Another clinical presentation, which hasn't been mentioned but I think should be, is in secondary syphilis you can actually present with anal polyps, not just nodules. So basically, if you get any odd look at, if you're looking in an anal canal and you see odd anatomical features that weren't there 3 months ago, I'm immediately thinking syphilis, because it tries hard not to look like itself.
The textbooks talk about perianal syphilitic lesions in primary being painful.
Yes.
An anal
chancre can be clinically indistinguishable from an anal fissure, and just as painful.
And your patient, the nodule in the area was painful, you said, which again sort of supports that that observation. Okay. Are there any other issues that the floor wishes to raise? And anything our discussants wishes to raise?
I'd like to. I have a question for you, but it's just curiosity. I would like to know how long he had started the therapy, the AIDS therapy.
So the first patient had been on antiretroviral therapy for just coming up to 9 months, because he was diagnosed 9 months previously and came with PCP, so obviously he didn't have any treatment for the first week or so. But
I am not an IG physician, but in Brazil I have heard a lot about the iris. Then I was thinking, when the first look at your case, I thought of iris.
Did I hear you say that you keep the record separate after this discussion? Do you see any value of putting the records together? Or
I think there's a there's the whole issue of people's sexual health records being available to modern electronic means to almost everybody in the country at the end of sharing. And so what element of the data should be kept separate? And until these people, if they're on antiretroviral, should that be kept separate? There is a big discussion going on.
Yes.
And in the UK. I mean, in the US, is the HIV diagnosis of your patient shared immediately with their general practitioner and their hospital records?
Yeah.
It is now. Okay. Right, I think we'll wind that case up because we've come to 25 minutes, and I'll hand over to Jenny to take us to our second case.
Thanks so much, President. Thanks, Dr. Barta. The other comment I would make clinically about the case is the presence of lymphadenopathy. So remember that should always be in the differential in secondary syphilis. It's a good thing to put on, even when you see it in any form, so not just the mesenteric form, obviously, here. So thanks very much for that.